With your Amex card, entertainment benefits like special ticket access and pre-sales to select can't-miss events while supplies last, make every tap music to your ears.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Shaq Show is a production of iHeartRadio. The PGA Tour is back. The return to golf is in the books at Colonial. Daniel Berger is your winner on today's Shaq Show. I'm just going to ask you to zero in on a little something to ponder from the week and then send you off to a few other sources to read about details of the tournament and then also have a little chat with Tim Prochka, the editor, producer, and guiding light of The Shaq Show. All right, so there is so much to think about from this first tour event in the COVID-19 era. And I will send you to my website. I did a winners and losers column. I will also probably do a roundup of some of the things that are written from on site, from the few writers who were allowed there, although they really didn't get any access to any players. So I don't know what they'll be able to share with us. But there were some very good writers there, and I look forward to kind of pouring through that. But right now, just kind of right off the back of the tournament, The really top line story for those of us who love the sport and want to see how this all played out is the component of television. And I thought, all things considered, CBS did a phenomenal job knowing that they were restricted on so many in so many ways, or limited by the same old ways that we know from the past. Just way too many commercial obligations and promos. And I mean, that list of things that Lance Barra must have in the truck to get in and out of a telecast have got to be brutal. Saturday's telecast, I thought the commercial load was shockingly light. And of course, now I know why. Sunday was brutal. Brutal. It's just really hard to watch at a certain point, especially when you had a golf tournament with so many people in contention. You need somebody to be able to kind of set up what we're looking at here, who's in the best position in this horse race when it is a horse race like that, instead of two people. And they just didn't have time, the ability to do that. They're not all there together, the CBS team. And it really was difficult if you were a new fan coming into golf to watch this, to kind of grasp what we were seeing there with all these top players suddenly disappearing. And who really had the best shot and who was doing what to get in the clubhouse. It just wasn't there. And really, I do blame the number of interruptions as kind of interrupting that flow. So that said, I would say that technically, other than I guess part of the country got a lot of standard definition golf on Saturday, CBS did beautifully. Just hats off to the crew and the people on site. It looked really, really hot. And that is just and then you throw in all the things they have to do for safety, brutal, brutal task. They did a really nice job. The announcers spread on in two locations, Jim Nance and Fort Worth, and Nick Faldo, Frank Nobilo, and Ian Baker Finch in Orlando in the on the morning drive set. All things considered, did pretty well. And, you were missing some of those things that you get from announcers sitting on a hole all day. And that was probably the one thing that stood out to me, that with so many putts missed and so many weird little moments of shock, hole lip outs and different things, it was just peculiar not having that usual knowledge that the announcer sitting there all day can say, hey, this pin on 17, you've got to watch the three footers here. Because I think if somebody was sitting there all day, they would have been able to say that. It became apparent, of course, after many misses. Other positives, and again, I have all the winners and losers on my website, jeffshackelford.com, but I thought the live drone on Saturday was really interesting, and it just showed again how that drone getting down at a certain height, but not too high, not too low, trailing up behind the leaders, was really interesting. It was just it just gave you a sense of place, a little bit of the scale, the vibe, which, of course, there wasn't much vibe because there were no people, but it was just different. It was nice. A couple times went to the drone, put up the leaderboard, really didn't get to enjoy that bird's eye view, which was a shame. Sunday, I think the wind really limited the drone crew, and so the shots weren't quite as compelling. There was some weird little shot they kept doing on 18 in lieu of the shot they traditionally have there with the clubhouse and the lake, and it was a little too far back, and we saw way more cart path than we did green and setting, but whatever. It was very windy, and it's very hard to operate a drone in the wind, so they have my sympathy. As for other elements of nitpicking, well, obviously, I don't think I need to tell you that the commercial load was awful, and the eye on the course component we were warned about was sort of code for be ready for lots of interruptions. CBS also had a confession cam, as it was branded, and I hope it never sees the light of day again. It was truly one more thing that just took us away from an interesting golf tournament. I don't need to know Keegan Bradley, how happy he is to be back, or that Jim Furyk's working on some things in his game to get better. That really just did absolutely nothing. It kind of gave this hostage video element to the proceedings. It just did not advance the storytelling of what was a very compelling golf tournament. Obviously, one less compelling without the energy of roars and some of the dynamics you get with a player making a putt or a player hearing a roar and wondering what that was. So that component they can toss. But overall, the thing that I wanted to point out and ask you to think about, if you're not on social media and you're not seeing what's going on, but the conversation about players wearing microphones is continuing. And in our world right now, it is a supremely first world matter that probably seems laughable to somebody watching golf people bicker about this from the inside. But it's an important topic for this reason. Players are resistant to it. And unfortunately, I don't see the reasoning being quite what you would hope. I saw Willie Wilcox mentioned on Twitter, a Korn Ferry Tour player. He refused because he felt like the equipment was just too goofy and clunky and awkward. And he was worried about poor language being picked up. I would totally get it if those were the main reasons the players were concerned about wearing a microphone. Unfortunately, and I'm going to talk about this a little bit with Minnesota Tim, what worries me is that players are fearful that their important state secrets would be heard on national TV about how they play the game and what makes them different. And their team members are telling them that this is important stuff. And I know this just from being at tournaments and listening to players and asking players, you know, what was your thinking on that? Well, yeah, it's just something between me and my team. And that is really frightening and bad news for golf, that if the view of what they do is so important and so secretive that we as fans can't hear it because it could compromise the competition in their minds or their ability to separate themselves, that's a disaster. That sends a bad attitude out to people that these guys think they're in a club, and we're just so lucky to even be able to get to see them wave to us on the first tee and hit a tee shot. That attitude will rub people the wrong way. The sports fan is used to now hearing more things, whether it's live or whether it's the production team going back and saying, hey, 5 minutes ago, here was a conversation that Colin Morikawa had with his caddy. Check this out, which is certainly something that could be done. The players just have to understand they're not that interesting. Their conversations are not that interesting. But for us at home, as Thursday's round showed with Ricky Fowler, the things we picked up were just different, and they were interesting enough, and then some of them required a little announcer explanation, and it just gave the broadcast something different. And that's all we want is just to feel like we're there a little bit more. And that's what happened with the match. We felt like we were there. And when Ricky Fowler was playing, you just kind of felt like you were there for the ride and inside the round with him in the ropes. And I love that. And it just changes your experience as a viewer. And golf really needs to change that viewer experience. And so watch this here in the coming weeks. Jim Nance kind of threw the guys under the bus a little bit. Adam Hadwin has kind of come forward and said, no, I volunteered 12 days ago. Anyway, you're going to hear Adam Hadwin with a mic. He's a great talker this week at Hilton Head. But it's more than that. They need to have microphones in cups like Fox does or on the bag so we can hear these conversations. But more importantly, the players have got to understand that this attitude of privilege, of entitlement to their secret important discussions will absolutely scare people off. And this is a chance right now for golf to bring in new fans, to show people that the ins and outs of the game are really fascinating when we're just allowed to sit back and hear it and then have the announcers analyze it. So I hope all the hundreds of PGA Tour players who listen to the show take those words to heart, or maybe the ones that the commissioner tries to put forward in explaining to them why, if they would like to be paid, they need to consider these things. Let's take a quick break here on the Shaq Show, and then I'm going to talk a little bit more about Colonial and the Charles Schwab Challenge with the Shaq Show producer, Tim Perotchka.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right. My head is spinning from this bizarre first week of golf in this bizarre time. And so Minnesota Tim, who produces this show and is the host of the Minnesota Tim podcast and makes me sound good and takes out all my lip smacking and editing the show, is a golf fan. So, Tim, help me here. What do we need to zero in on from today? Because there's so much that went on in the Charles Schwab Challenge 2020.
Yeah, Jeff. So there were some obvious things and some not so obvious things that need to be focused in on. So one of the obvious things is that there were no fans there. And without there being fans, it really seemed like at some points during the broadcast, we were able to hear conversations between players and caddies. And even players that weren't mic'd up, we were able to hear conversations between players and caddies. And sometimes you can hear that on a regular basis as well.
Right.
But it seemed like we were able to get more of that this week. Wanted to get your thoughts on that.
I actually wanted more. I'm greedy, though, because I want to hear what's going on out there. And I actually expected to hear a little more picked up by the mics than we did. But, I mean, the best was when Ricky was playing, Ricky Fowler, wearing a mic, and you got to hear a lot of the interaction in the group. Or whatever it was, when he didn't know where his ball ended up, if it went out of bounds, all that stuff, and he was trying to get direction. So, yeah, it was better, but and understandably, CBS did not have the full effort like Fox does at the U.S. Open, or even CBS on a normal week, or NBC, you know, has a great sound guy and does work there that is often underappreciated. So, I understand they had fewer microphones. I didn't see many by greens, frankly. I don't know. Did you? So they did well, but it showed you that without fans, yes, if the microphones are well placed, we'll pick up more. The problem, Tim, you know what the problem is. You've seen it on Twitter. I'm just now having to deal with the Adam Hadwin Marching in Chowder Society. These guys think their conversations out there are akin to the Joint Chiefs of Staff having a meeting at the, you know, in the bunker of the White House during a war. I mean, it's golf, guys. You know, yes, I know you don't want to have us pick up a little swearing. I get that. Nothing that they are saying is that interesting or that privileged. I'm sorry. They need to get over this. It's ridiculous. They're not being this way because they're really worried about the F-bombs. I would get it if they were saying it was about the equipment, because the equipment is kind of clunky. And I totally get that as a golfer. Who wants to have a cable running up your back and a thing on your belt? But they're not saying that. They're acting like they want to keep their insights secret. Every other league, you literally can listen in on what's going on during the sport now in NASCAR. And it's just, anyway, we can go on and on. It's so bizarre to me. They have to get over this.
Mm-hmm. Well, it makes you wonder, did you hear the mic pick up the first shot on Thursday of Brooks Koepka and Jon Rahm after he chipped it in?
Sure. Yeah, that was, and Jim Nantz handled it beautifully. It was not the way they wanted to kick off things, and it might have made them a little more sensitive going forward.
Yeah. So another one of the big things that I noticed this week, coming from an average golf fan like myself, it seemed like there was a lot of choking going on. It seemed like putts throughout the week, and not just on Sunday, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday as well, were left short. A lot of people were missing short putts. Jordan Spieth four-putted, and I mean, he does that all the time anyway.
Ooh,
but Xander, yeah. Morikawa, Bryson DeChambeau, I mean, those are just a few of the guys that I wrote down that were missing short putts and were just awful around the greens.
I have a few thoughts on that. One, they clearly softened the course from what we had heard it was playing like the week before to get the field around. And I noted this in my winners and losers column. So it was a little overwatered, but it made sense to get the field around. It ended up great. They lit the place up, and then they took it up a little notch on the weekend. And we've seen that great players, as great as they are, they still don't love big upgrades in green speed mid-tournament. It looked to me like they picked up just enough pace combined with hole locations where, you know, generally the tour staff doesn't like to see a ball snap near the hole when they place a cup. And I did see a lot of that. I was surprised. So they used some pretty tough hole locations at times, sneaky tough, that might have looked simple to us on TV. And you saw that ball get up to the hole and kind of, I mean, Justin Rose on 18, that putt just took a dive in front of the cup that would have gotten him to 15. And he handled it beautifully. I couldn't believe how jovial he was in his post-round interview, but obviously it was a great week for him, kind of probably with low expectations. Spieth was a pure yip job, pure yip. I mean, you saw the forward press. He was back to the not that nice, simple, put the putter down, lock in the forward press, and boom, boom. It was not a good look. He looked uncomfortable on that one. I mean, we all have been there. I'm laughing, but so overall, but to your point, the choke job, I have a theory. I think the world rankings have gotten a little out of hand in the way people expect that if you're the world number one, you're going to perform every day like the world number one. And they don't mean a thing when you get on the golf course. Now, what is startling is here's a great golf course that has always produced quality winners and a leaderboard that was amazing with multiple elite players. And other than really Justin Rose from the super elite, they had a horrible day. They were awful. Justin Thomas was just okay. It was just his lull round of the week, I guess. But it was kind of startling that you saw the conditions get ratcheted up a little quicker, greens a little drier, a little more wind, and that's usually the recipe where the journeyman, the solid tour player, kind of gets left behind, and the elite guys take over. And that didn't happen today. It went the other direction. So that was totally bizarre. And I have no other theory other than we probably overinflate the importance of the world ranking and expect ridiculous things just because somebody's in the top 10 in the world.
Okay. All right. Well, I will let you
do. Do you buy that theory? Are you working with? Are you?
Do I buy that theory?
It's not tennis.
The world golf ranking theory? No.
Well, it's just over. It's just overinflated. Well, it's not like tennis where you're the number one player in the world and you generally play like it every day. Golf's just different. It's
yeah,
weird.
But I don't think that's a reason for guys missing putts and struggling.
Well, no. The putting. Yeah, I agree. It was alarming and at times for sure. The greens definitely had a little bounciness. We had some good worm cam shots. I mean, Morikawa's putt in the playoff, the minute it was off the face, you could see he just pushed it a touch, I thought.
Yeah.
I mean, that Mark Immelman set it up, said it's just inside, just a little left center, and the minute he hit it, you went, no. So I don't know about Schauffele's putt on the same hole, but that cup definitely gave him trouble.
I wonder, Jeff, if the short putts, all of these short putts these players are missing, is a product of these PGA Tour players not practicing them while they're on their home course for 3 months. They just pick up and go on to the next hole.
Well, it was impressive how good the golf was the first few days, because we kind of gleaned from a lot of interviews and social media that a lot of players put the clubs away. And the rust was not apparent. And I think that was the most impressive thing about really the first 3 days, really. And so you may have a point. It may have just been the simple element of rust finally reared its head when things just went up a notch. And those players who were shut it down for a while didn't really quite have everything going. And the two guys who were playing great before the break ended up in the playoff. So maybe we shouldn't have been surprised. And by the way, I'm so happy for Daniel Berger. Anybody who has a wrist injury, I've had it. It's the worst injury in golf. And then to be playing the way he was before the break and have this shutdown, and then to come and do what he did. And then he showed some emotion after, which was wonderful, because the thing missing with fans was kind of some of the emotion of players. I mean, Xander looked like he wanted to break every club in his bag on 18, which is great. That made you go, okay, yeah, this tournament mattered, because he looked, he didn't do anything rude. He just looked like he was about to erupt as a volcano. He didn't look happy. And it was quite a wacky performance there down the stretch in so many ways. But, and then Berger just, that was nice to see some tears and choked up and what it meant for him to come back. And after sort of being forgotten.
Yeah, I got one more point for you, Jeff.
Okay.
On my end. So our big discussion between you and me and you and the rest of the golf world is the golf ball going too far? That's your big bit. That's your big thing, okay?
I thought we were going to have a short chat here on a Sunday night.
We can make it quick. So Colonial Country Club, it's not an overly long golf course, but a lot of dog leg left and right.
Here we go with the scores.
You got rough. Here we go. Fairways aren't wide. You got to take irons off the tee. Bryson DeChambeau averaged 340 yards off the tee. Daniel Berger averaged 306. Berger won. Right. DeChambeau did not.
Yeah.
Do not shorten the golf ball.
Oh dear. Yeah, that's a tough take. We're going to have to work on this behind the scenes where nobody should have to listen to me. Just think about it this way. If we took 10% off the ball and allowed them to hit drivers on more holes, guess what? Bryson DeChambeau, because of what he's doing, would still be the longest player in the field. And Daniel Berger probably would have still won the tournament or been right there. It was just such a crapshoot. Who knows? But you have to understand the point of that, of wanting to take, to chip off something, is to make Colonial play more like it was intended to play, to see a few more drivers during the round, a few more mid irons into greens. It's not to take away something that Bryson has earned or Daniel Berger has earned. It's to just bring some elements back in the sport that are allowing us to go back to these historic places. I mean, how cool is it that we get to go to this place where Hogan won five times? It's just not so cool when we go back there and they just play some bizarro game that, by the way, it's just not that interesting, and especially when TBS is showing it, because you never see any tee shots. Not never. But they showed very few tee shots of Bryson, and it is compelling right now when he hits a driver. I don't disagree, but the number doesn't really mean anything. What's interesting to me is that what you just pointed out, that one player won, one player with his strategy contended, but it didn't quite pay off. It doesn't mean it's a wrong strategy, but I think over the course of the year, it's the right one. The numbers say it, bomb it down there and gouge a wedge out. And that's up for the governing bodies to decide if that's good golf, if that's really what we want, and if that's healthy. And I'm, as you know, don't believe that's the case.
Hmm.
Didn't convince you there, huh, Tim? Okay, well.
Oh.
I'd like to say, cut you off or say something, but you're the editing maestro of this show, so you'll be able to decide how you want to handle that. You could probably chop out a few of my comments and make me look bad. So.
Hey, Jeff, will you say one more comment and say, Tim, I agree with you, and then I'll just delete everything you just said.
There you go. Yeah, you can just use that anytime. Yeah, well, I appreciate the chat. I appreciate you bringing that point up, but I mostly appreciate that we had some interesting fodder. But I'm just curious, quickly, as a sports fan, you're just a big sports fan. What do you think? I mean, is this going to work? Golf, I believe, will work, but is this doable? What we just saw?
Yeah, I definitely believe so. But the one thing that's going to be interesting, Jeff, is I don't think this is an if. I do not think this is an if, but rather a when. We've seen it on the Korn Ferry 2 already. Four players tested positive for COVID-19. When will a PGA Tour player test positive for COVID-19? How pissed off will they be?
Yeah. How do they handle it? That's the question. And that was a big number from the Korn Ferry Tour. And I heard one player did not test positive, but was asked to stay home because he had come in close contact with some people. So that was eye-opening, and that's the question. By the way, not just media and officials, but players have been asking, what happens, what's the number that shuts things down? And I don't know what the answer is to that question either. So I think the tour is probably wisely just not said, because what do you say? I think you have to take it one week at a time. I thought they did a horrible job in terms of the people who could easily have been making an effort to show, and I noted this in my winners and losers, an effort with some masks and especially indoors in the scoring area. Wow, come on, guys. We're, you know, indoors. Let's really let's try to make an effort here. This is kind of embarrassing, especially when it's on national TV and there's millions of people watching. And that could backfire on them. That's especially when you flip over to NASCAR and they are just going gangbusters above and beyond crazy with their precautions and efforts. So I would imagine Jay Monahan will be sending out another text message to everybody that they already sent a few this week, trying to remind them. But I don't know what the number is. I don't know what the issue is there. I mean, the beauty of for golf is that once they get to the golf course, it's very safe. It's the getting there and the interacting in indoor areas and their so-called bubble hotels, all four of them, that really don't make much sense to me. And I feel like they need to tighten that up. And I hope that that looseness of the bubble doesn't backfire. I really do. And I think the other looming question, though, too, this week, you know, just watching kind of where things are going with tennis and what the players are saying. Now, tennis has a much less American-centric elite group of players, Tim, but golf does have a lot of players in Europe who either aren't eager to come here right now or it's just not doable. And the question for the major championships in the fall is, or late summer, can we really contest our championship properly if players from around the world either don't want to come here because they feel unsafe or because they just simply can't, because it asks too much of them to come here? And that's kind of what tennis is starting to sense with Flushing Meadows and the U.S. Open. And I think that's a subtle kind of quieter question to watch even more than just what happens at a tour event, because I think the chances of us even knowing of a positive test or something are slim.
Yeah. Well, we still got $100,000 on the Masters being played in October. So
I think
I'm
was a dollar and it's in November. So get your dates right.
Well, whatever.
It's in the fall. Yeah. It's a dollar. And I think that's an interesting element too that I was pondering today. If the Masters can't have full crowds and they can't have the full field, I just don't see them being comfortable having it. So, but that's a ways off. We'll deal with that. But they're very protective of how their tournament looks and is played and feeling like they presented it a certain way more than ever. You know, I think they made some mistakes and they know it in the Hootie Johnson era and the two chairmen since are so sensitive to making sure they protect what the Masters was built into. So that's something to keep in mind as well, I think. But hey, thanks for the chat, Tim.
It was fun.
It was certainly an interesting exercise. And for more, check out my website. I've got some winners and losers. I talked to you about a few of them here at the beginning of the podcast. So I hope everybody enjoyed what was the return to golf. And it will certainly spur a lot of interesting discussion in the coming days. And now a word from our sponsors.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And guess what? So are we.
Just in case you forgot, I'm Tori Deal. I'm a 6-time finalist and a Challenge champion.
And I'm Anissa Ferrer, and I've been gracing your screens for the last 2 decades. I am a veteran challenger and Challenge All-Star.
And speaking of All-Stars, All-Stars 4 is finally here.
I'm going to be honest. I literally thought this day was never going to come.
Well, the Challenge gods have answered our prayers, and we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, redemption seekers, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
Anyone can win, relationships matter, and only one all-star will claim the title of Challenge Champion.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Shaq Show is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hey, until next time, that's this coming week at Hilton Head Island. We'll see what happens. Be safe, and thank you for listening to The Shaq Show.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith, host of the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at the very least as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and I answer your phone calls and respond to your tweets. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions and straight-shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers, all that and more. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.